Welcome to another edition of Town Matters on WWER 88.1 FM. My name is Ted Tate. And once again, today in our studios, we have Mayor Robin Schick. Welcome back, Robin.
Hi, Ted. It's great to be here.
We're getting old hat at doing this, and it's always nice to have you answer a few questions about what's going on. It seems like every month, even if we don't get questions from the residents, something happens to be worth talking about, so we don't necessarily need new questions from the listeners. We've got some events recently that we need to talk about. Back in July, of course, the town had a problem at the waste treatment plant where over 1 million gallons of wastewater made its way into Goldman Creek and potentially out to the Potomac River. The town took a lot of steps to try and improve communications from that spill. There were a lot of lessons learned about how to communicate better, how to respond better, how to communicate with other government agencies, both in Virginia and our neighboring Maryland, who actually owns the Potomac River. Let's review that a little bit for a moment as background. What has the town changed in the way they responded to that first spill? What have you been doing to make sure that we're prepared for future issues?
Sure. Well, one of the biggest things that we did and the reason why that spill was so significant was because we were not on 24/7 coverage at the time. It was also a federal holiday. And so now we are on 24/7 coverage. We are still hiring at the wastewater treatment plant. So if you're listening and you would like a job that has benefits and night hours, the wastewater treatment plant is hiring. We'd love to hire a local and we can help you get certified and things. So if you're interested, let us know. But we are on 24/7 shift all through the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, all of them, especially until the SCADA system, which is the electronic system that failed in July, that gives the warning signals out and also controls, it's the electronic controller system for the plant. We've ordered a new one and it should be installed in December. We are going to, you know, make sure coverage is working through January. And we really have to have that completely stabilized before we would ever go off of the 24/7 shift work. We're also getting a backup alarm system called a Delta, which works in with the SCADA, but we have to install the SCADA first in order for the Delta to integrate to it. So it's a lot of steps, and these steps take a long time.
Even when you're expediting them, as you obviously are.
Oh, I mean, we passed it immediately, and obviously, yeah.
So having all of that in process, we now, on November the 11th, had another smaller spill of about 45,000 gallons. What can you tell us about that? What went wrong? Was it the same problem or a new problem?
No, different problem. This problem was a pump failure. This was a pump that is 15 years old and has been rebuilt but never replaced. However, we have so many pumps that are like this that it really was not our highest priority pump that we were concerned with. We have a backup to it and a backup to that backup now in place. But one of the biggest differences between the spill in July and the spill was that coverage that's there, the, you know, hours and eyes on the field, because we were able to respond to this one much quicker.
The background to this is at this time, unlike the 4th of July weekend where there was nobody on site, and so it was discovered when somebody arrived to work.
Right.
This time you were doing 24-hour coverage of the plant. Somebody's there all the time. They were able to catch this very quickly, determine there was a problem, and start taking action. So the much less sewage went into the water.
Yeah, I mean, there was a heavy response once, you know, everybody was notified from the plant. And the plant and our public works department are working hand in hand, which has been just phenomenal. I just want to say a big shout out to all of our employees who show up in these emergency situations at whatever time they're called, because it can be the middle of the night, it can be early in the morning, it can be on a holiday when you're trying to maybe eat Thanksgiving dinner, I don't know, you know, any of these times. And they are showing up and really working together to handle the situation. And what took some time in this particular instance was getting a pump back in place. And so it did take several hours, I think it was like 2.5 hours to totally, from start to finish, get it completely under control, because you're literally mechanically fixing the problem right at that moment,
right?
In the middle of it. So
that's, honestly, for a situation like this where something's broken, that's not a bad response time.
Yeah, no, I'm really proud of them. And I think we have a communications plan now, and that's been operational. And you may have noticed, I don't know, in town, this communications plan applies more than just to the wastewater treatment plant, but to any major incident. We had an incident by our daycare center, by Ashton's daycare, that the police responded to very bravely, very in line, and handled the situation, got everything under control. Person is in custody, and for, you know, a threat that they saw there. And the response was just phenomenal. And there is an incident report from that as well. And that's all part of this communications plan. So whenever, anytime something happens, because we're, things are going to happen, at least there is now this reporting document and much better, I think, public-facing communications as well.
You mentioned a reporting document. Is this something that the public can look up and find?
Yeah. The incident, it's called an incident report form. It's on our website.
Okay. So the daycare incident, I didn't really hear about other than seeing some posts on social media about it. But if people wanted to see the official report of what happened and how it was dealt with, that's the place to go, the town's website.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is colonialbeachva.gov.
Gov. Yes. .gov. All official now.
Getting back to the water treatment plant issues, we have had two completely different systems fail, and what it's the common element in this has been deferred maintenance. The town, for some period of time, has been unable or unwilling to pay for necessary maintenance to pumps, alarm systems, equipment in general, and so you have old equipment that has needed to be maintained, that has not been properly maintained, failing. The big elephant in the room then is, okay, you're dealing with these crises, you're putting out fires. Mm-hmm. What are we doing to prevent that from happening in the first place? Because we shouldn't be, if we're running the place right, we shouldn't be having this situation. Yes, things fail, things happen, all of that. But if you're maintaining your equipment properly, it happens a far less.
Sure. Well, first off, I'll say Colonial Beach is one of many localities across the nation that are dealing with maintenance issues on their treatment plant. And while any spill is not good, the reality is that Arlington, Quantico, Fairfax, all localities that have a lot more money than us and a lot more staff than us are having bigger issues with us even than we are. So I want to put some perspective on it. But ultimately, we do need to get a handle on the deferred maintenance and then and have a replacement schedule in place and be properly caring for the plant and upgrading it as necessary. The last upgrade we did, major upgrade, was a lot of stuff to our water system. You know, the water meters, we did all of our pump stations. Well, not all, but a lot of our pump stations have been rebuilt. And the tanks have been refurbished, repainted. We have been spending a lot of time on the water side, so that's really great. Our water side is doing pretty well right now. But it's time, I think, to catch up on this sewer side. And the sewer side, and they're totally separate. I think that was one distinction that I guess people got confused on when we had a spill. They were worried their drinking water was affected. It was not. I just want to make sure that's clear out there. They are two completely separate systems. Water comes from uphill and sewer goes downhill. They don't touch. So you're good on your water.
Even if they are on the same bill.
Yeah, they're on the same bill, but they don't go through the same pipe. So yeah, in that respect, we're doing good on that. And you know, I don't know if you remember, but it probably was like 10 or 15 years ago now. I'm not sure, remember, where we did have some water issues that even had like E. coli and stuff like that. I mean, it was before my time, but I remember getting notices, like a water notice.
A boiled water notice.
Yeah. So, you know, it's sort of always this issue of reactionary issue to these systems, and it's forever. At the same time, we are and have been pursuing solutions to our wastewater issues for I mean, since I became mayor, for sure, because we have lobbied Richmond. We have asked our, you know, federal and state partners for assistance in our treatment plant, knowing it had issues, asking for help, knowing that our residents' utility bills could not provide enough, you know, money to fix that. And so we have been awarded about $5 million from the infrastructure funds from the federal government that are funneled through the state. And we're through DEQ. So we are looking for exactly how to prioritize spending that. We thought we had some of that prioritized, but the reality is some of the things that are breaking weren't what we thought was going to break first, you know? So obviously the SCADA system, the electronic system, the backup Delta system, these pumps, several pumps, and I mean a dozen pumps or more, are already ordered. So those things are currently right now. So
we've put out those fires.
That's already. It's in process. I won't say the fire's put out, just to be, you know, honest about that. Supply chains, things are taking a long time. A lot of these things are installed by specialty companies. This is not just, you know, call your regular plumber kind of situation. So major investments have been made. And my understanding is that we follow through with the $5 million that we were granted, and we do it right, and we make good investments with that, and we show that we are spending that money in a way that helps our public welfare and safety, and then we can ask for more. So we should be continuing to request funds, more funds, to get ahead of this issue.
So is this relatively new for the town, the asking for funds, looking for grants, all of that feels like kind of new territory to me, or am I wrong? Has that always happened in the background?
Well, I wouldn't say the town never got grants before, but there was a reluctancy, at least from my understanding, of sitting on the other side of the podium over many years to pursue major funding like that. And what I was told kind of directly once upon a time was that, well, grants come with strings. You know, well, if we get money from them, then we have to do things, you know, a certain way.
Yeah, but and they also come with reporting requirements.
Yeah, they do.
I spent this money in the way you told me I could.
I know. And so, sure, that's true that these grants funds do come with strings attached, but most of the time they're just strings that require that you validate your federal and state dollars. And I think that's good accounting for the state and federal government to begin with.
And you prove that you spent it in the way you said you were
exactly,
going to spend it.
Exactly. And that you have really done it thoughtfully, that you have, you know, not just willy-nilly bought whatever fancy new thing is out there, but that you had a plan in place and that you went through your priorities. And, you know, sometimes, like with this stuff, we just spent the last 6 months going through major construction downtown and to replace the water and sewer lines that were down there. And our downtown's looking great now. It's all put back together.
I was, by the way, kudos, because I thought those streets were going to stay ripped up for the winter.
Well, we very fortunately have had pretty decent weather. Yeah. And if the cold had come in faster, they would have been. So I'm really appreciative that the weather has held out for that. But that was a $2.5 million project that was funded by ARPA funds or COVID. I think that was actually like the second COVID funds. I'm starting to get mixed up because we've actually been pursuing all of these monies in many different fashions as much as we can handle. Some of it has to be front loaded, as in, like, we have to be able to expend the money and then ask for it
reimbursement.
Exactly. So that creates some financial planning. You know, I mean, you have to have the money in order to spend it, right? So we have been doing financial planning. We have been setting aside funds, managing funds in order to be able to handle spending this kind of money, to get reimbursed this kind of money. And, you know, I'm really proud of that work. But that is kind of a new undertaking to this level.
Mm-hmm. And it means very careful money management.
Yeah. And it also means prioritizing and asking for the things that your community really needs. And so we have to have a good handle on that. So we have a legislative agenda. It's on the website. And we also do a retreat in January where we spend hours and hours and hours really going through what did we accomplish last year, what are we looking to do next year, what meets the goals of the comprehensive plan, how are we going to make that happen, how can that come to fruition, how can we prioritize our capital funds, and how can we reinvest them, and how can we make a dollar turn into $10, basically, as often as possible.
So you've got grant monies that are helping you catch up on all this deferred maintenance is what I'm hearing, basically. Is that fair to...
So we have some grant money that is helping us fix some of the problems. I won't even say that's just catching up on deferred maintenance. I mean, we are trying to make improvements at the same time as well. So the new SCADA system comes with a maintenance plan. It is also, you know, today's technology instead of technology from 15 years ago, which is going to be massive. But that's going to need training for all of our employees. And it's going to help bring that system into, you know, the day and age that we live today, which is great. And hopefully be more efficient. The new sewer line downtown was because, I don't know if people have forgotten, but the manhole at the end of Colonial Avenue was overflowing at times because of I&I issues. And that was just a lot of issues with the pipes there. It had breaks, it had leaks, it had other pipes that had been drilled through the sewer pipe. I mean, you name it. It was really a mess down there, like a bird's nest, really, of things going wrong. And so we had to dig it all up. We had to put it in at new elevation. It's all clean now. Every connection to it has been, you know, restored. Connections that were false or bad or leaky have been fixed or capped. And directional issues. It even had flow going in the wrong direction at one point.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a mess. So we fixed all of that. So we're also going to be improving some efficiencies in these things, too. So that's good. It's more than just maintenance.
But I mean the issues that we've been talking about at the water treatment plant itself, those have been deferred maintenance rearing its ugly head and old equipment failing under the strain.
Sure.
Are we working or have we created a plan so that that isn't an issue anymore, that we're staying up to date?
Yeah. So our staff there, we have a fairly new wastewater treatment plant manager. Our prior manager, Curtis, retired this last year. And Harry's our new manager. And he's been in the process in the last 6 months, basically creating a plan and prioritizing all this equipment and finding new things that every day, sometimes this plan keeps changing. But we have a third party that's coming in as well. And this third party is what they do. They come into wastewater treatment plants. They assess the entire plant. They help you prioritize your needs, the things that are wrong. They're going to give us a report, a comprehensive report. They're going to give us a timetable on that report. So I think it takes more than just our staff. You know, I think getting other
well, and perhaps involved. Having a disinterested third party look at it objectively and say, well, this is what you should be worried about.
Yeah.
This is what you should be working on.
And they're going to give us a cost to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to, you know, at least some sort of estimation of what that means to fix it.
So the council can then start trying to figure out how to pay for it.
Yeah. And like I said, this is a topic we shouldn't, you know, this should come up again and again, and it will for anybody in this position or you know, in the future. And it's not a topic that's, you know, been new to anybody in prior administrations either. Right. They're well aware.
Well, it sounds like the town is certainly taking steps in the right direction to improve things and help prevent problems. Certainly this latest spill was far less than the first one, and so it sounds like some lessons maybe are being learned, and hopefully we'll continue down that path.
Yeah, and improving communication too, which I think has been a big plus out of this. A lot of lessons learned, and we keep learning lessons. And
let's move on to some other subjects of interest to people. In particular, we had a listener ask us about a very specific property at the corner of Bancroft and Weems, I believe, that is being built. in the residential area of the point. But this building doesn't look terribly residential. It's quite large and tall. The questions arose about whether or not this person had a permit and why they were able to build it here. Do you want to go into a little detail about what happened there?
Sure. So a formal complaint was made with the town, which if you ever have a zoning violation to address in your neighborhood, please go online. There's an online complaint form. You can fill it out and send it in. And then that starts this whole process of investigation and deciding whether it's compliant or not and things like that. So that happened on, you know, this particular issue. And it was looked into. They do have a permit. It was signed by a prior zoning administrator. And so there's no stop work order. They are allowed to continue to build. A lot of other conversations have come out of this because the reality is we do have rules that this particular property are not compliant with, but yet they got the permit. And so we want to fix those loopholes, right? And that has been a pretty major topic of our planning commission in this since that time that this has been brought up and moving forward. And out of that, we have a regulation called the FAR, which is the floor area ratio regulation. And what it does is it controls boxiness.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a real word or if I just made it up. It's a
complex architectural term.
Yeah, called boxiness. It's called massing, actually. So, but I like to call it boxiness because I think that gives you a good visualization of exactly what we're trying to stop from happening with this regulation. So, because we have a lot of other regulations. We have stormwater, impervious regulations, we have height restrictions. You know, we have a lot of other things that if you build in town, you have to come compliant with that are above and beyond just the building code.
So this is the FAR.
FAR. Floor area ratio. It's a division problem where you take the actual square footage of the mass of the structure, which would be all floors and any attached enclosed spaces like a garage, and you add it all up and you divide it by the size of the lot. And that's how you get the FAR, the FAR. And so this neighborhood that we're, like the Point neighborhood, is R2, which is residential 2, and the FAR in R2 is 0.4. So we are enforcing, ensuring that that is enforced. We went through the Planning Commission. We were asked by the Builders Association to review whether 0.4 was too restrictive. Because they were concerned that, you know, there have been several structures that have been built in recent years that were maybe, you know, slightly above 0.4. That one in particular, in which has risen a lot of concern about, is much, much higher than that. It's like a 0.9 or something. And if this regulation had been enforced during that, then that would not have gotten approved. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we are making sure this regulation is now enforced, in which it is. So the Planning Commission just reviewed this. They had public hearing on it. And to my understanding, there was a lot of discussion about whether 0.4 was too restrictive, if 0.6 was too open-ended, and they left it at 0.4. So it's not coming back to council. As far as I know, the Planning Commission has held public input and it was staying at 0.4.
If somebody is proposing to build a structure that is beyond 0.4, say a 0.6, mm-hmm. Is there a process? Can they, I guess, ask for a variance of the zoning?
Yeah. So you do that through the BZA, the Board of Zoning Appeals. That doesn't come to town council or the Planning Commission. The BZA is a completely separate board. And in order to appeal to the BZA to get a variance on any zoning requirement, a setback, this FAR ratio, or what have you.
Height restriction, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is that you're going to the BZA for, you have to show a hardship for it. And oftentimes, things that go to the BZA and get approved are because a lot is maybe a funny shape or maybe something is encroached on the lot that would affect being able to comply with those things. And those situations do happen. So, sure. You know, if you're in that situation, you need to go for a variance. You know, there's a process for that. And
yeah, maybe you've got a corner of your house that's a little too close to the property line or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some weird things that can happen.
You've decided to put your house on at an angle instead of in a square. I can see where there are times where...
And the point is not a... You know, the number streets are pretty rectangular, mm-hmm. the lots are. But the point is not necessarily like
it's
that.
It's a jigsaw.
Yeah. So there are a lot of instances in some of these older neighborhoods where the lots really are not a regular shape or size, and maybe you would need that. So there's a process to do that, but that would, you're asking for a variance to the regular rule of law, right? So you would go through the process to do that.
You're listening to Town Matters on WWER. My name is Ted Tate, and I'm speaking with Mayor Robin Schick about a variety of topics of interest to folks. So we've kind of covered that house on Bancroft. It's a done deal, essentially. It's got a permit. It's being built. So the folks who live in that area who were not happy with it, I'm afraid that's where we are at this point with that. But we've learned that if there are future zoning questions, you can certainly go to the town website to raise those questions about things going on in your neighborhood. The last thing that we were thinking about talking about today was a recent purchase by the town of some new property. Now, it seems a little odd because the town just recently sold a lot of properties to the Dotson Development Group, and they're turning them into hopefully good businesses and interesting places to eat and visit and live, sort of rebuilding the town a little bit and putting new growth into Colonial Beach. There's a lot that the town has just, or a property that the town has just bought. Robin, why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and what the thinking is? Why is the town buying property again?
Sure. So the council just recently adopted the authority to purchase for public use property that adjoins town property we already own. So the town owns 700 Colonial Avenue, which is where an old warehouse is. It's where the old wastewater treatment plant system used to be. And it is where hopefully our new rescue squad will be placed, as they are fundraising for that effort right now. And so we've authorized to purchase the property next door, which is 800 Colonial Avenue. It is where an old motel that has been vacant for some time. We had a very unfortunate incident there several years ago that where somebody passed away, and it was shut down due to safety issues from the fire marshal. And it's really just been derelict and an eyesore ever since. And so I think this is a great opportunity for the town to reinvest the funds of properties that we've sold and to have an opportunity for something that has really been a detriment to the gateway into town.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that as everybody drives into town down Colonial Avenue, that's one of the first things they see.
I mean, the doors kicked in right now when I drove down Colonial Avenue, and it looks just terrible. Mm. And I know they painted it, a few years ago or something, but that didn't really...
And boarded up the doors, but yeah. I guess people have...
I don't know if raccoons are living in there. I don't know. I mean, many people have gone through and evaluated this property for for a private industry or doing something with it that way. Nobody seems to obviously been able to really get anywhere with it. So I think it's important for the town to step up on these things. And it's a wonderful investment opportunity being adjoined to public land we already own.
Right, because that means you could build something bigger adjoining, encroaching into both pieces of property.
We would have a lot of flexibility for whatever public use need there is. This time, the only action that the town council has authorized is purchasing and demolishing the old motel.
So at this point, that's all that's going to happen. Correct. They're going to buy it. They're going to demo it. It will be an empty lot waiting for the town to decide what they want to do with it.
Yeah, and most of the time, these kinds of things go through a long public process about deciding what to do, when to do something. We need to assess what all our needs are in town, what is the best use of these things. And, you know, if we need satellite parking for a while, that's okay. If we need whatever it is that we need. But right now, what the town really needs is to remove economic blight from Colonial Avenue.
And there it is. Just a chance to clean up a little bit and then figure out what you want to do with it.
Yeah, and it's always a good idea for us. You know, I don't want the town to, you know, get rid of all of its land value assets, right? So we've captured a new land value asset, and that's part of our portfolio of investments. And that's part of this whole strategy of keeping everything going and making the right moves and choices for our future.
And as you say, it's part of the gateway into town, so you don't want it to look blighty.
No, I don't. And I'll be kind of glad, I think, when it doesn't look the way it does right now.
I always drove past it, though, thinking, oh, that could be, you know, a motel again. That could be something. But I guess there wasn't the right person who came along and could see doing that or had the money to do it, I guess.
I mean, it's been on the market a long time. Yeah. And I think if the private industry matched for that, then that would have happened already. There's been plenty of ample opportunity for those things to work out. At this time, I think it's just, you know, there isn't really a better spot, to be honest with you, for the town to purchase another property, because this one adjoins one of the biggest pieces of property we own. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of a win-win no matter what happens with it. And it's, you know, and the only stipulation is that we're right now committed to demolishing the structure that's there and just keeping it cleaned up.
Great. Robin, anything else new around that you want to cover before we finish up? We're running out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to have a free-form last word.
Yeah, I just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, all of those things this season. Hold your loved ones tight. Spend time with the people that you care about. Colonial Beach has a lot going on this Christmas season and through the new year. So check out WWER, listen in and tune in for all their announcements on fun things. I think churches are getting together and doing some celebrations. Particularly, there's a winter solstice service that's coming up on December 21st. Also, a caroling on Town Hill. And I just want to give a big shout out to all the volunteers that help decorate Town Hill and Public Works that help decorate the town. It's one of my favorite things during the holidays, too. You know, if I leave town for any reason to go shopping or, you know, visit other family, and then I come into town and those lights are down Colonial Avenue, down Washington, and you hit that turn at Town Hill, it just cheers me all up. And so I just really appreciate all the people that put effort into that, because I think it does it for all of us.
This town runs on volunteers.
It sure does. And we couldn't do it without y'all. So I just really appreciate it.
Robin, thank you very much for joining us on 88.1 FM.
Thanks for having me, Ted.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.